This Civic Media podcast is sponsored by UW Organ and Tissue Donation. Organ donations are desperately needed, and now is the right time to become an organ donor. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. Go to heroicdeed.com.
Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app, this is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
Hey, welcome to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Happy Monday to us all. Jess P.S. is on the board. I am on the mic, and you can join us anytime, talk or text. We're getting there, Jess. Well, we had 8 days.
Eight days,
baby. Oh. We can do it.
Oh, boy.
I've stayed drunk longer than 8 days. I'm pretty sure we could. I was young. I can't do that anymore. Mm. Oh, my younger days.
You're down to 6 days, huh?
Yeah, well, at least a couple, man. Had a great weekend. Happy 50th to my brother-in-law, Sebi. We closed down Mad Planet, dancing the night away. Oh. Had a blast. Good to see everyone. And it was great to be out and about and lots of people coming in. My brother-in-law's friends all over the country got to see lots of folks I haven't seen in a while, and to catch up and to go and have some food and drinks and dancing. So I missed the Nazi rally, but we'll get into that in the 5 o'clock
plenty
hour.
Plenty of time for that.
Plenty of time, plenty of sound, folks, and you're going to want to hear it. Big show today, John Nichols from the Cap Time and the Nation. He's going to join us at 4:30, and hopefully going to have some other guests this week, reaching out to Ben Wickler as well, trying to get him on for this week as well, and lots of folks that I think you're going to want to hear from on these waning moments of this election cycle. God help us all. 855-75-CIVIC. Want to start locally here, and you know the big concerns about the MAGAs, of course, are the migrants, the illegal immigrants that are taking their jobs and apparently voting, but not necessarily the case, of course, because this is MAGA and they like to, you know, excite people. Let's call it.
Maybe you're kidding.
Rev up the base.
Nah.
And it's not like they're actually going out there trying to attract independent, undecided, you know, type voters. It seems to me, you know, certainly given this rally and some of the rhetoric coming out of MAGA these days, they're just trying to get their base to turn out. And if you get turned on and turned out by some of the trash that was talked about at this New York City, Madison Square Garden rally slash whatever the hell that was, you know, I have some words for you. And well, there's other folks that have words, other opinion pieces that I will read and share with you so you know exactly where some people stand, what some people say. But the reporting here at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Quinn Clark, no, thousands of undocumented immigrants are not voting in Wisconsin elections.
Duh.
But you gotta say it and then what? Support it? And with all the Stop the Steal and all the lawsuits and everything that went on, don't you think they would have found? Well, they did find some. But it's so minuscule, it's irrelevant. Huh?
Yeah,
from the reporting.
You know what also happens?
Hmm.
People die from vending machines.
Like 7 a year, I
yeah.
think.
That's more than non-citizens vote.
They try to get their arm in to get their,
yep,
their,
and it
their,
falls.
Their candy bar or something, yeah. It jams and it falls on them, and
yeah.
It's a hell of a way to go.
Therefore, we should ban vending machines.
Bad.
All of them.
All vending machines are bad. Quinn Clark reporting, with the election just 2 weeks away, all right, less than that, one of the most widespread claims on social media platforms like X and Facebook is that large numbers of non-citizens are voting. The false claim, I'll say it slow for the MAGA, the false claim has been echoed repeatedly by former President Trump, posted dozens of times by ex-owner himself, Elon Musk. This guy's a piece of work. And many of those posts specifically sow mistrust in Wisconsin's elections. For example, online personality Peter Berniger, an election denier known for filing over a dozen lawsuits against state and local officials, told his 45,000 followers on X last month that, quote, There are 300,000 non-citizens and illegals who are poised to cast a ballot in our elections in Wisconsin. Now, Berninger attributed his statement to data showing the Department of Transportation had issued more than 258,000 driver's licenses to non-citizens since 2019. Information, he said, was obtained through a public records request. Now, only citizens who show valid proof of residency can vote in Wisconsin elections. DOT spokesperson John DeFrivers declined to confirm those figures or comment on Berninger's claims, citing the department policy against speaking about ongoing lawsuits. Ooh, there's an ongoing lawsuit. But in a motion to dismiss a lawsuit making similar claims last month, attorneys for the DOT said Wisconsin, quote, has many checks in place to ensure only citizens vote. In this motion, the DOT noted that people must prove they are U.S. citizens or lawful residents to get a driver's license or ID card. The Federal Real ID Act requires all states to check immigration status before issuing driver's licenses. And although people are not required to prove their citizenship to register to vote, any non-citizen who tries to do so would be breaking both state and federal law. In Wisconsin, election fraud conviction is a Class I felony, which may result in a fine of up to $10,000 and 3.5 years in prison or both. Of non-citizen voting being a problem, Wisconsin Election Commissioner spokesperson Riley Vetterkind told Public Investigator. This is at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Now, here we go. Let's get into some of the stats. And we got more stats and numbers. I'm going to throw them out there because I don't know how you figure this thing out, Peter Berninger. By the way, grandson of Hillshire Farms fame. So, way to be privileged. Way to use your time and resources, Peter. A study of the 2016 election by the Brennan Center for Justice found that across 12 states, only 30 incidents of suspected non-citizen voting were referred for further investigations. These incidents were out of 23.5 million votes, which means a potential non-citizen vote accounted for 0.0001% of the votes. 0.0001% of the votes. The Wisconsin Election Commission has been made aware of only 4 alleged cases of election fraud related to citizenship since 2015. That's 9 years. One case happened last year when a Ukrainian woman was charged with a felony for voting as a non-citizen in Mequon's school board election. She said that due to her limited English abilities, the vote was a result of a misunderstanding. Vetterkind said the names of people who are registered to vote in Wisconsin and who participate in an election are fully open to public inspection, including by law enforcement entities. So there's some statistics, some numbers. Now, Peter Berninger, yes, Peter. As mentioned, this guy's Hillshire Farms grandkid from New London, Wisconsin. Man, I grew up in Stevensville. I mean, I was right there, man. He's right up the street from me. I think what down S76. Not sure what the streets are up there in New London. Went to the Dairy Queen, man. London, New London had the Dairy Queen. Hortonville didn't have that. Stevensville didn't have anything.
Claim to fame.
We had to go to New London to get to the Dairy Queen. But Peter, come on, man. Are you kidding me? Here is a little bit from The Guardian. Years before his relentless hunt for evidence of election interference, Berninger focused on a very different venture, entrepreneurship and startups. According to court filings, now again, this is Berninger. This is a social media guy referenced in the Journal Sentinel piece about immigrant voting. According to court filings, Berninger and an associate raised hundreds of thousands of dollars from investors to bankroll a collection of companies in the food processing business. Among other ventures Berninger touted was a company was called WeGel, which he claimed was capable of harnessing waste from catfish processing plants to produce an alternative form of gelatin, one that could be used widely in pharmaceuticals. But according to The Guardian, there was a problem. The business partners were never able to manufacture a sellable product. According to charges brought by the department in a 2008 case before a U.S. district court in Mississippi, a jury convicted Berninger of mail fraud and bank fraud for his participation in the scheme. He successfully appealed the initial amount of restitution down to $1.7 million from the approximately $2.2 million initially ordered, but was unable to convince the courts to reduce his prison sentence of 70 months. It's not clear how Berninger, whose grandparents founded the sausage and meat company Hillshire Farm, sustains his election-related efforts today. So, a fraudster. I mean, a convicted fraudster. The dude had to pay $1.7 million and do 70 months. So consider the source. You can say what you want about me. They haven't caught me yet. No fraud conviction. Never had to pay $1.7 million yet. Keep fingers crossed. So, yeah, dude, come on. Are you kidding me? So he's caught up in this. Some way, somehow, there's some of the numbers. Also, the Washington Post reporting from just a couple of days ago. Patrick Marley, our friend, used to be over at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, now with the Washington Post. Quote, GOP focus on rare non-citizen voting may continue long after Election Day. Around the country, Republicans are seeking to rewrite voting registration laws and file lawsuits over non-citizen voting. In Wisconsin, it's coming down to a fight over the state constitution. We'll put this one in the show notes as well, but I just want to throw a couple paragraphs out there for you. Quote, evidence of non-citizen voting in state and federal elections is scant. Election officials who oversaw voting for 23.5 million people in 2016 identified 30 instances of possible non-citizen voting, according to the Brennan Center for Justice. That amounts to one potential non-citizen vote for every 783,000 ballots cast. Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger announced Wednesday that his office had identified 20 non-citizens on the voter rolls, or 0.002% of the state's 8.2 million registered voters. And a federal judge in 2018 determined at most 39 non-citizens got onto Kansas's voter rolls over 19 years, with administrative errors likely counting for some of them. 0.002, 0.0003. I mean, pick your number. Whatever it is, it's not enough to impact an election. And for the focus, for all these Republicans throwing these numbers out there, making a big stink about it, we're wanting to change Wisconsin's constitution to a does not exist except in their heads. This is the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Going to get to some of your calls coming up next. Also, don't forget, John Nichols, he's coming up from the Cap Times and the Nation. He'll come on and join us at 4:30. But I want to get your sense. Are non-citizens, is this a concern? Is this a problem? If these numbers are accurate, and this is what we've seen, we're talking about the Georgia Secretary of State, the Brennan Center's investigations, right? They've looked into these, all the cases that were filed. There's nothing there. Not to say it doesn't happen, but it happens so infrequently as to not matter at all. In fact, I was reading some articles the other day. A Republican, I forget what state. I'll look it up over the break. Well, she filled out her mother's, dead mother's absentee ballot and then forged her mother's signature to witness her own. 855-75-CIVIC.
You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line. It is a text line. And we will get to you folks. Just be patient. I wanted to throw out there that I wasn't going mad. A Minnesota woman is accused of turning in a ballot for her dead mother. A routine check caught it, according to the AP. A northern Minnesota woman accused of trying to submit a mail ballot for her recently deceased mother has been charged with three felonies, showing how routine election safeguards thwart rare instances of attempted voter fraud. Officials in Itasca County, about 200 miles north of Minneapolis, said Monday that the improper vote was caught because the state provides a monthly list of people who died to election officials, then flag those names in the state's voter roll registration database. The woman returned ballots for herself and her mother in early October, and the county auditor's office, which oversees local elections, quickly verified the mother had died at the end of August, almost 3 weeks before it began mailing out absentee ballots. The criminal case was filed last week in state district court in Grand Rapids, as former President Trump continues to suggest he will lose the November 5th election only if his political opponents cheat. There's no evidence of significant voter fraud in the 2020 election, which Trump lost, don't tell him. And there is no evidence Trump adversaries can or will rig the election this year. A woman told the sheriff's lieutenant in an interview she filled out her mother's ballot after her mother's death, according to a probable cause statement filed with the district court. The statement said the woman was an ardent, quote unquote, an ardent Trump supporter who had wanted to vote for him before she died. The county attorney, Jake Fauchild, said the case showed election officials can catch problems and even rural counties have the resources and willingness to prosecute election fraud. The county has about 45,000 residents. It was flagged almost immediately. We do have ways of catching and flagging these fraudulent ballots. And we're going to do something about it so those ballots don't get through. So, yeah, there is, those things happen. I'm not saying it doesn't happen, but in this particular case, there's an ardent Trump supporter, I guess, doing her mom's last wish, but that's against the law, and now she's charged. 855-752-4842. David from Mequon, you will be first today. Happy Monday, David. What do you got for us?
Hey, thanks for taking my call. So really quickly, there's a couple problems with what you stated. I've been following what's been going on in the state of Virginia. Not sure if you've been following over there. There was roughly 1,650 voters or non-citizens reported.
1,300 suspected. Yes, 1,300. Yes, I'm aware of it.
But the judge said, no, they can't be purged.
They can't be purged, correct. Because, you know why? Hang on, right. But David, do you know why the judge made that determination?
Yeah, because it was under this 90-day requirement.
Correct. And if I may, David, there was some evidence that some of those people were actually citizens. And it was also, it was a bulk action. They got to do individualized, and it's got to be before 90 days.
All right.
Here's the point, though, David. Do you object to that? Is that the right decision or the wrong decision, in your opinion, sir?
I think... yes, they should, according to what I read, because they're non-citizens, you don't even need to worry about the 90-day grace period because they're not allowed to vote, period.
But the judge cited specific evidence that there were some that were actually citizens. So would you want to be one of those citizens, say half of them are citizens and half weren't? Right? You can't just throw them off the rules, right? Well, you're supposed to do it at an individualized basis.
So the ones who are citizens, yes, they should be allowed to go back in the rolls. But the ones who are non-citizens, there's absolutely no reason why to put them back in the rolls.
Okay, but how are you going to show? Do you have the time right now, David, to go through all this? That's the point. Is it so close? Well, to the election's next week, man. You know what I'm saying? And if you don't have same-day registration, I you're totally just screwing people. You can't do that.
Well, again, I don't think it's that big a deal. I think it should be done correctly. Then you look at Lancaster, Pennsylvania, the county. There's 2,500 now that just came up. You can Google Lancaster, Pennsylvania, potential voter fraud already. There's a lot of suspicious writing and all this other stuff. The point is that, you know, it doesn't take much. If you remember, Al Franken won the state of Minnesota when he bounced out Coleman by like 300 votes. That was it. He became Senator Al Franken in 2008. And so, yeah, it can matter, especially.
Okay, but can you give me anywhere where it's been 300, man? We're talking about 20 out of millions. It's not even been 300 out of the totality of any of this information that I've cited, David. Can you give me an example of that kind of massive illegal immigration, non-citizens voting? Because, yeah, man, if that would be the case, yes, absolutely. But that's not the case, man. That's not being proven anywhere.
They're not even looking for it, Don. I mean, the city clerks are not even looking for it. So we don't really know the actual number potentially out there.
Okay, man. Listen, you can't even register If you check the box. Now, I know folks want to say, well, you got to bring your birth certificate and your passport. I mean, good luck on that. You're talking about actual citizens are going to even have a more difficult time to vote. And that's not a good thing. Andrew from Detroit, we're going to slide you in here before John Nichols joins us at the bottom. Welcome, Andrew. What do you got?
Hey, Dom. So I'm using a sponge to get my brains off the wall after that last call. Good God.
Stay with us, Andrew. Don't do it, man.
Oh, my God. No, it just exploded on its own. It's not like I did.
Okay.
Good God, these people. I'm just it's never been. It never will be. It just is. Why would these people who are not, why would they expose themselves
right
through voting?
Yeah.
Why would they?
They wouldn't, Andrew. Of course they wouldn't. If you're here, if you don't have legal status while you're here, yeah, and presumably you're probably working, doing something, you don't want to stay under the radar. That's part of the problem that we have a lot of, because we don't have the proper immigration system set up, which we could have had something more towards a reasonable system had Donald Trump not nixed the House effort to do that. But you're absolutely right. Why would they expose themselves to felonies and $10,000 and all this other? For what? For one vote? I don't buy it, man. It's too big of a risk. A couple of the texters, Andrew from Maine, the caller said it should be done right. The judge said it should be done right, not in mass. So the caller agrees with the judge. Yeah. Also, Virginia registration deadline is 22 days before the election. So if Jeff had it removed as a legal citizen, he would not be able to re-register. Thank you, Andrew. Folks, this is the Dom Salvia Show. John Nichols coming up next.
You're an organ donor, right? Well, here's a tragic fact. Approximately 20 people die each day waiting for precious donated organs. You could make a life-saving decision simply by getting that important dot on your driver's license. That little dot shows those who need to know that you've made a decision to donate organs at a critical time. Go to heroicdeed.com to learn more about the importance of organ donation and how you can make your wishes known. Talk to your family. Get the dot. Save lives. HeroicDeed.com.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Super jazzed as hell to introduce to you right now my next guest, John Nichols from the Cap Times, from the Nation magazine, a friend of ours. Hey, John, welcome to the show.
Hey, brother, it's good to be with you. You're playing Styx.
Yeah, man. John, I asked just to play a little Styx. this event that Donald Trump put on at the Madison Square Garden, he was teasing, man. Apparently, they have a secret that they're not going to tell us, him and what, Speaker Mike Johnson. And I'm really wondering what that secret is, John. What was your big takeaway from the closing argument from the Trump campaign in New York City?
The closing argument from the Trump campaign in New York City reminded me a lot of one of my favorite, maybe my favorite, Beavis and Butthead episode. And it's the one where Beavis and Butthead get assigned the night shift at the burger restaurant.
Yeah.
And then they get really bored. It's before they like throw all the burgers into the fan and totally destroy it. But people are driving up to the drive-up window. And they're saying, hello, is anybody there? And then you'll hear, like, go away. And I sort of thought, that the message to a lot of voters, like a real lot of voters, was go away.
It didn't seem to be very inclusive whatsoever, and we do have some sound. We're going to get to that in the next hour. But we can contrast perhaps by tomorrow. Vice President Harris is going to put her closing argument to the American people from the ellipse tomorrow. What's your expectation there? How do you think that will compare to what we've seen recently from the Trump campaign?
I'm going to be vaguely more dignified.
Vaguely.
I also have a feeling there may be not substantial periods where the candidate just like rolls back and forth to music without any speaking.
The 40-minute playlist, right?
Yeah, yeah. With the worst playlist in America, by the way. Not that there weren't individual good songs on it. I mean, there are a couple of decent things. Of course, Respect Leonard Cohen and, you know, Hallelujah and things of that nature. Very good cover version by Loudon Wainwright, or by Rufus Wainwright. But with that said, put that playlist together the way it was put together, that was really bad.
Yeah.
And so by contrast, you know, you realize that Kamala Harris is touring with Bruce Springsteen, and then in Madison on Wednesday night, she's going to have Mumford Sons. And so, you know, by and large, I think Harris is going to win that side. But I think what you're really asking was a substantive question.
Yes.
And what I will say to this substantive question is this. I do think the Ellipse speech is one of the most important speeches of Harris's career. It will be paid a lot of attention to, not merely because of what she's going to say, but also because of that stark contrast mm-hmm. with Trump, right? Trump's closing message was, I am, you know, as crazy as you think I am. And Harris's message has to be something very different than that. I think it will be, I have great regard for this America's this country's institutions, its traditions. But if she's smart, she will also say, at the same time, I know they haven't always served us all well. And I know why there's discontent and concern. And so putting that together, saying there's a way to solve our problems. And so she shouldn't just use that Ellipse moment to remind everybody of everything that's wrong with Donald Trump. She should also say, look, we can make this system work. We can overcome these deep divisions and actually, as a country, do some great things. If she does it right, I think the combination of the Trump rally, which I believe was very damaging to Trump, at a point where people are really starting to pay attention, I mean, those whatever wavering voters there are, the combination of the Trump fiasco with a very strong Harris speech, if she pulls it off, that could really start to kind of open things up here at the close and give her a strong finish. So, the pressure's on, my friend.
John Nichols from the Cap Times and The Nation magazine. John, you know, it's always the October surprise, and I keep seeing, you know, some folks thinking, well, it's Donald Trump, what he does and how he does it. He continues to be his own October surprise. You know, some of the reporting I've seen also, John, the polling, like, you know, that the averages of the polling are getting skewed because lots of right-wing polls have been dropping in the last, you know, several weeks. Giving us the impression that perhaps this is a little closer than it is, and perhaps, you know, laying down that seed corn, as it were, for the MAGA to say, well, hell, you know, all the polls said they were tight, and all of a sudden she wins by 5. There must be something wrong here. Do you agree with that sentiment that perhaps some of the righty polls are pulling the national averages?
Yeah, I do. I think that there are polls, the right has flooded the zone with polls.
Yeah.
They put in a lot of polls from groups that tend to skew a little more conservative, and from polling firms that tend to skew a little more conservative. You always have some of that, but I do think there's been some more of it. And I will tell you, one of the polls I really respect is the ABC News poll. And it came out on Sunday, and it showed Harris with, I think, a 5-point lead nationally. As well as really significant numbers among Black Americans, I think around 90% among Latino Americans. It was quite high. Women, it was well in the upper 50s. And then those numbers in that poll, to me, pointed to the prospect, not the certainty, because this is still a volatile time, mm-hmm. but the prospect that she could get a win along the lines of Biden's, you know what I mean, that's kind of in that zone. It won't be the same as Biden, though, because the battleground states have changed. And remember, there's two things that matter here. Number one, Harris needs to have a large popular vote victory.
Yeah.
She needs to win all over the place, because that tells Trump, you know, look, don't play games here. He may play games.
We know that.
I gotcha. But she needs that combination of a large popular vote victory. I think the rally that Trump did on Sunday helps with that in states like New York, California, other places. At the same time, of course, she's got to win the battleground states and get that electoral college vote up. My sense at this point is that she might not make it in Arizona. She might not pull Arizona off. She might pull Nevada off. I think that Georgia and North Carolina are still hard, difficult states. Pennsylvania's a little tough. I do think she's probably likely to win Michigan. I think she's likely to win Wisconsin. Not necessarily by landslides, but, you know, good organization, a lot of good things happening.
Yeah.
And so when you add that all up, right, the space for Harris to win is there. But this last week is going to matter a lot, because if she can start to tip more of those battleground states to her, if she can pull it off, as she's trying to do right now, in Pennsylvania, in North Carolina, and in Georgia, maybe even get Arizona back in the game. If she can pull that up, it's you know, a really solid victory. And I'll tell you one final thing, Don, that's really interesting. You tell me, who are the groups in the last month that Trump and Vance have really insulted?
Everybody, except straight white men. I mean that this is, but John, that's a fair question, because it's not about who he's insulted, it's who he hasn't. Because I feel like that's a shorter list.
I realize it's a shorter list, but there's two groups that he's really kind of gone for. Right, his, not just him, I should say more broadly, it's his campaign and the people associated with him. Yeah. Number one, Haitian Americans, right?
Mm-hmm.
Number two, Puerto Rican. Okay. Where are there a lot of Haitian Americans and Puerto Ricans? Florida. And so I will be very interested in this final week, whether the Harris campaign, which, by the way, just the other day went to Texas,
mm-hmm.
kind of opening up the map a little bit, whether the Harris campaign may take a shot at Florida. Because if you really were to, if you have a tip into mobilizing in some of the communities that Trump has really insulted, suddenly a state like Florida can get more competitive. And it's not just me saying this. Rick Scott, the senator
yes.
from Florida, has been scrambling to distance himself from that rally.
Yeah, right? I think that tells a lot, doesn't it? I mean, if the Republican yeah. senator from Florida comes out like, and not immediately, but almost immediately says, oh, no, yeah, you know that's got to be concerning for him. And that might be a little more in play, John.
Well, that's what I'm saying. And so that's why this week is a big deal week. I think there's a lot of people who kind of live in the past as regards politics, right? They think that politics operates like it did in the 1960s, the 1970s. We didn't have, you know, instantaneous communication. Something might happen. It might take a day, even till the afternoon of the next day, for people really to broadly have a sense of something that had happened. Now you get it, you know, in the moment. And so the final week becomes a different dynamic. A lot of things that will happen in this week, revelations, events, speeches, all this, can actually influence, you know, some portion of the electorate.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I will tell you is I think we're going down to the line here. I think they'll be campaigning till midnight, 1 a.m. on election morning, maybe even a little later than that. And not by on Trump's, because he can't stay up. You know, he can't manage it that big a day. But at that point, he's just, you know, like doom scrolling and tweeting. But for Harris, I think she and her team are going to, you know, they're going to go for it. They're going to go for not just a victory, which is not assured, right? That's still the first struggle. But for a big victory, because that gives her, you know, much more strength going into the presidency. And it also holds out at least the outside chance, I think a very outside chance, that they could somehow hold the Senate. Now that's going to take some work in Texas or Florida to you know, get one of those challenges to an incumbent by a Democrat to succeed.
Yeah.
I think that's a real uphill struggle, but that's what you're going for, right? You're going for a victory where you not only get the presidency, but you actually have a Congress you can work with.
Yeah, yeah. Folks are listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That is John Nichols from the Cap Times and the Nation. John, I want to get your opinion on the billionaire influence, number one, and the lack of the LA Times and the Washington Post in endorsing a presidential candidate. The LA Times editor, she quit because of it. Folks are canceling mm-hmm. their Washington Post subscriptions because of Bezos and his decision on this. What's your sense? Do you think these endorsements these days, nowadays, do they even matter? And what about the influence of the billionaire on journalism?
Okay, first off, you know, as Bernie Sanders and I said in our book, billionaires should not exist, right? I mean, every billionaire is a policy failure. You should be taxing. Once you get to that level, man, you ought to be paying enough taxes to bring you down into the humble zone of the 900 million.
Yes, yes.
If he
can make it on that, John, you know, all you can do is try.
I mean, they're really going to have to tighten their belts.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, like Bezos, I mean, give you an example with Bezos. He bought a yacht recently. I think it was in the Netherlands. I hope I've got that right. And to take the yacht out of where it was built, they had to take down one of the most iconic bridges in the country. And the people in the Netherlands are like, what? You know, we're not going to take our bridge apart so you can take your yacht out. That's how these people think, right? You know, they think we can actually, like, you know, just take everything. Ah, Lincoln Memorial's kind of in my way. So kind of a good view there. Can you move it? You know, and so they have too much money. It's making them dumb. And so, first off, that's my beginning point.
Yes.
But when you get into media, this becomes a really problematic thing because the billionaire class is not without its needs and demands. And one of its needs and demands is for a system that is so corrupted that it benefits billionaires on a regular basis. It doesn't tax them. It doesn't regulate their industries. It doesn't, you know, challenge them to be better citizens. And they fear the possibility that it might. And so what you're seeing, I think, with both LA and particularly Washington, D.C., is a decision by billionaires to have their publications stand down so they don't offend Donald Trump. Right. And this is a really terrifying notion because it means that even the wealthiest, most powerful people in America are afraid of a Trump presidency. Right.
Yeah.
So we should take away from that a real concern. We should also understand that the American people still expect their newspapers, even if they're not, you know, as influential as they once were, to stand for something.
Yeah.
And
hey, John, we're going to come up to a break here. You have a few more minutes on the other side of the short break.
Oh, I'm at your service.
All right, my man, John Nichols from The Nation and from The Cap Times. Stick around. We'll come back with John in just a moment.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show. John Nichols, my guest from the Cap Times and the Nation magazine, sticking around for one more segment. John, thank you so much for your patience. We were so rudely interrupted by those commercials talking about the lack of endorsement from the LA Times and the Washington Post and the billionaire's impact on media. John, any more thoughts on that?
Sure. And, you know, before I was so rudely interrupted, but, you know, here we are complaining about media.
Right.
But look, here's the thing. Billionaires have interests. They actually have a lot of interests in what government does. And, you know, what the decisions of the owners of the Post and the LA Times, major newspapers, to intervene and to block endorsements, which both those publications clearly intended to do, ought to be troubling to us. And what it means is the publications aren't reading, or the owners of those publications are not reflecting the information that is reported in their own news columns, because there are many, many good reporters for those papers. So that's a bad thing. And it's frankly a function of something that's happened in America. We've had an awful lot of our newspapers get bought up by either wealthy people, like these guys, or hedge fund managers. And in both cases, they often stop doing endorsements because they don't want to offend anybody.
Mm-hmm.
The bottom line, though, is that freedom of the press in America was established with the intent to offend. You know, if you go back to the founding of the American experiment, they weren't, you know, like saying, you know, someday, 200 years from now, there may be, you know, some rich guy owns a big company that ships you packages. And, you know, we want to make sure that he can do what he wants. That, you know, wasn't the concept. The concept was that you would have a lot of newspapers, a lot of media outlets, different, you know, forms of communication that would create a robust discourse. And you ask whether endorsements matter. They may not shift a ton of people, but they feed into that robust discourse. And some people saying, you know, we support this guy, some saying we oppose. Endorsements are most important when they come from unexpected places, when a conservative paper, like many Texas papers in recent weeks, reject the Republicans because they think the Republicans are too crazy. Mm-hmm. Same thing would happen if a liberal paper rejected a Democrat. And so they do have meaning. They may not have immediate meaning, but they're part of that discourse. And boy, when you abandon that for self-serving, self-dealing, commercial purposes, you are saying two things. Number one, you have no understanding of freedom of the press. And number two, you have no respect for American democracy. Those are two pretty bad signals.
John Nichols.
Hope I'm not sounding too preachy.
From the Cap Times and the Nation magazine. No, not at all. George Orwell said it, right? Journalism is printing something that someone does not print, does not want printed. Everything else is public relations. And it really, and I feel for the journalists, and I respect, you know, the journalists at the LA Times and the Washington Post, most of them anyway, and they're beside themselves. And a lot of them, they put their signatures to a letter objecting to it, and we can appreciate that. Ironically enough, what, they changed their tagline, John, to democracy dies in darkness, and then they shut the lights off. John, before we run out of time, I want to get your sense. I saw you tweeting out on Eric Hovde, and we haven't talked since the debate here with Senator Baldwin and millionaire Eric Hovde from California or Wisconsin. He really, really didn't know a lot about the farm bill. John, apparently he's not too into rural Wisconsin. What was your takeaway from that debate?
Well, that was my takeaway, man, right there. You know, or like, you know. Look, here's the bottom line. You know, we got this thing called Google now. It's not that hard. It really, and with AI especially, it is not hard to get a download on the farm bill pretty easily, right? And if you're running for the U.S. Senate seat representing a state that leads the nation in specialty cheeses and cranberries and, you know, a million other things, right. And frankly, it still has a very substantial rural economy with hundreds of thousands of jobs, blah, 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 whole thing. You would think you would at least make a basic effort so that if by chance some farm radio reporter asked you a question in a debate, you could give a credible answer. Instead, he didn't even try to lie to people, which is kind of creepy, you know? It's, at the very least, I want my politicians trying to lie to me.
I read it. I love all parts of the farm bill. It's my favorite bill. I've read it all, but it's very private to me. I don't want to talk about it right now.
Nicely done, Tom. No, that's actually a way. What's your favorite part of the farm bill? It's 2 Corinthians, you know. But what I'm saying is, it's like I really don't want politicians to lie. I think it's a horrible thing.
Yeah.
But I know that sometimes they do. And one of the things they do is if they don't know about something, they kind of filibuster in some, you know, vapid way. You know, farm bill is really important. And, you know, the liberals have gotten it all wrong. People like Tammy Baldwin, they just, you know, want to spend and spend and spend. But the way they spend doesn't help our farmers. And so when I get out there, I'm going to open up that farm bill. I'm going to say, you know, hey, Wisconsin farmers, what do you need? How can we make your lives better? And I'm going to take that, you know, right into those committees, right to that floor. And I'm going to make sure we have a farm bill that's good for every Wisconsinite.
Perfect.
Now, I just said nothing. But I said nothing. But and yet, you know, it sounded okay, right?
Yes.
Eric Hovde didn't even bother to do that.
Yeah. Well, are you surprised, John? This is a guy that rolled out his campaign video for Senate and didn't mention the state of Wisconsin. 30 seconds left, John. Probably won't talk to you until after the election. What's your prediction, sir?
My prediction is Kamala Harris probably wins Wisconsin and Tammy Baldwin probably gets reelected. But it's not going to come easy. And as I said before, this is a very volatile week. So I could obviously and easily give you a prediction that was different in 2 days.
All right,
but
John.
I think where we're headed is there.
John Nichols from the Cap Times and the Nation magazine. Thank you, my friend. We'll talk real soon.
I look forward to it, brother.
Thanks, man.
the national news cycle never stops. But it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.